This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions. Unfortunately, for my sins, I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter. So we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money. But we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I've spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Morning, Gordon. Welcome to this week's Doc and Guru podcast.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one with Dr. Nick, because we're going to be talking a lot about World Cup 2010, which for me, I'm proud to say I went to 15 games in 2010. I bought in big time because I knew it was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm really looking forward to this discussion this morning.
Yeah, it's going to be great, Gordon. Dr. Nick, Nick, welcome. Nick from the Future Leadership Forum. Nick, and you and I go back a long way. You know, we did some work back in 2009 at the Confed Cup prior to the World Cup. But I mean, let's just talk about your history. German of origin, academic out of Berlin. And you came here so taken by the success and the unifying factor that sport brought to Germany in the 2006 World Cup that you came here and did a lot of work with South Africa, SAFA, FIFA, etc. on the 2010 World Cup.
That's right, and thank you very much for having me. So basically, I came out as a lecturer at the University of KZN. I'm a brandologist by trade, so branding is really my game. And I was absolutely fascinated by how Germany leveraged the World Cup in 2006 to rebrand the nation. You have to remember that the brand image of Germany before the World Cup was terrible. It was heavily influenced, obviously, by the Second World War. Germans were seen to be unfriendly, not very hospitable, boring, at times even hostile. And the World Cup turned that brand image around, totally.
Yeah.
So I had a sense, and it really united Germany, it reunited East and West Germany, and I had a sense it could do very much the same for South Africa.
Yeah, and Nick, just going back then to that time now, it's 10 years on, 2010, 2020, what was your feeling at the time? Did it do that? Did you get what you thought you were going to get in South Africa and its people at the time?
Well, I think it was a moment of magic. I think it brought out the best in the South Africans. It brought the nation together. And I think the biggest lesson for me is that South Africans are very good at overcoming challenges. Remember, there was a lot of challenges. There was load shedding in those days, 2008. There was xenophobia. Mm. There was constant talk about Plan B.
Yeah.
The whole world, especially the European soccer bosses, were very anti-South Africa and anti-hosting the World Cup in Africa. And what it meant is that the nation really, everybody bought in, the nation rose up, and rose up to delivering this great challenge.
Mm. Yeah, and I think what was exciting for me, I was involved with it through a client visa, and we pitched for the visa business in New York, and I was trying to explain to the guys in New York, their view was, it's going to be a failure because South Africa is not going to get out of the group. I said, no, you're missing the point. The way it was pitched for me was essential to understand. It was the African World Cup, which was held in South Africa. And I think that Pan-Africanism really played out towards the end, because when South Africa went out, you just adopted the next team. We just adopted Ghana. We just adopted everybody. And so people were just going out, and you could see it on the streets. The flags, whichever African nation was playing that week, that's where the flags were being sold in Sandton. It was absolutely outstanding for me, that Pan-Africanism.
Look, it was a showcase for the nation. It was a showcase for the continent.
Yeah.
I think it was the greatest at in a long time. And that for me was a big takeaway.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Nick, just fast forwarding to now, you know, so again, if you look at that last decade, what do you think is the good, bad, and the ugly? In other words, what have we done as a country? And I know you're passionate, and I'm not, I don't just want to talk on-field Bafana performance. That's one aspect of it. I'm talking about hospitality. I'm talking about fan engagement, consumer index, confidence, tourism. Those are the sort of aspects that, that I'd like to just touch on. In your experience over the last decade, what do you think has happened in the country?
Well, looking back over the last 10 years, and I interface a lot of with visitors, international visitors coming to the country. And if there's one thing that 2010 really proved is that we've got a world-class package.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what visitors experience, visitor experience, which, by the way, South Africa won got the best visitor experience rating. They got a 92% of visitors said they would recommend destination South Africa back home, versus 88% in Germany. So what we obviously need to do to win what I call the World Cup of Hospitality is to make South Africa safe again. That's a big concern of visitors. I just had a group of Americans come out, and they love the country, they love the scenery, they love the people, but they're concerned about the safety. And obviously that is a factor.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's the macro and the micro, you know, the macro safety issue, and then within the stadiums themselves, there are micro issues, and that's just not about 2010 only. I mean, it happens at rugby, it happens at cricket. You're having pickpockets, you're having all that sort of thing, and that just becomes a bit of an edgy thing. So that's when, unfortunately, as a sports fan, you kind of default to watching the game at home. You know, it's like, well, let's just have a bra at home, and so the stadium's empty, and so the magic and the appeal of the event diminishes, because we just want to stay at home and watch it, because no one's going to pick my pocket at home unless it's my missus and she's after the credit card again. You know.
Well, I think very importantly, 2010 proved that yes, we can make South Africa safe. It was 31 days without a major incident, if you remember. There was a sense of total safety and security. Operation Blue Light really worked fantastically. They had these 24-hour courts. So that's a big takeaway. And I think if we get that right, then the sky is the limit. Then we can literally, easily double job creation and tourism. And as you know, tourism today is the biggest job creator. It's the biggest industry now. It has surpassed mining.
Absolutely, Dr. Nick. And I think, you know, a lot of us feel that way. I certainly do as well. And I again, much like yourself, I host international people periodically, and they love it, and their only concern is safety and security. And I say they're only, it's a major issue. Just in terms of what are you doing now, are you still involved with the government? Are you doing stuff around tourism? Are you working with SAFA or with FIFA? What is the latest with Dr. Nick on that front?
Well, you see, what I realized as part of the 2010 legacy is that building the future has everything to do with leadership. So a few years after 2010, I set up the Future Leader Forum, where I basically go around the country and interview leaders, current leaders, future leaders, about their insights into how can we achieve what we did in 2010? How can we build a better future for basically our children? And so I've been interviewing 120 future leaders by now. I'm packaging these insights, and I'm hosting in September the Future Leader Summit, where we're going to look for, the future leaders are going to look for South Africa's next big idea, which is the one big idea that can propel the country onto the next level. And it's my vision to help propel South Africa into the top 10, the 10 best countries to live in by 2025. And I think if we get the same kind of energy like we had in 2010, we can do that.
Yeah. Geez, that's unbelievable. That's a lofty goal, and hats off to you, Nick, because, I mean, if we can do that, you know, it's nothing short of phenomenal. And you're right, it's to package it. You know, and sometimes through our history, Gordon, you know, we have those moments. Now, I go back to 1995. I go back to 1996 with the AFCON. You know, if you could bottle that, you could bottle the togetherness, the euphoria, the forgetting about the differences and celebrating our sameness, our similarities. You know, if I look at, although we won the World Cup of Rugby away in France in 2007 and now in Japan, still, if you can bottle that togetherness, and as you say now, obviously we're talking about your experience at 2010. Nick, in terms of your interviews with 120 leaders, what is the general sentiment? Are they positive? Do they feel they can do it?
Yeah, I think what's really coming out is that the future leaders, the next generation, the 20, 30-year-olds now, they have a totally different outlook than us. They are not obsessed with the negativity, the failures, what's going wrong. They're genuinely passionate about the future. They're genuinely passionate about what's possible now through innovation, through technology. And they're already active on grassroots levels with initiatives to really build the future. It's incredibly inspiring to see what these youngsters are doing out there.
One of the, I mean, you've talked about innovation, but, you know, looking at your body of work to a degree, one of the most interesting angles for me was your application, or your study and application of Zulu military culture of regiments. And I hope I'm pronouncing it right, but the Isicwe code. Just unpack that. What have you learned from traditional Zulu culture, which will equip us to succeed in 2025 on a global stage?
Well, by trade, I'm actually a historian. I studied the Roman Empire. I wrote my PhD on the Roman Emperor Nero, who was very badly judged by history. And then when I came out here to the University of KZN as a lecturer, I came across the true legacy of King Shaka. And when I say true legacy, and I've been spending 20-odd years now researching the leadership legacy of King Shaka, not only did he grow his empire 10,000, his influence 10,000 times in 10 years, he also, and not only did he invent a new technology through the stabbing spear, the ikhwa, and reinventing the battlefield, the horns of the bull, but he also reinvented a new society, something that's never been achieved before. When I say a new society, it was a society of true equality. It was a society of true and full meritocracy. And it was a society of universal participation of every member of the community through elements that we've forgotten already, through song, through dance, through music. And his vision was to not only unite all the tribes in Southern Africa, but to build a global empire that would stand on par with the British Empire. And if he had not been assassinated, today President Trump would be reporting to Kwa Budavayo.
Yeah. But, you know, Nick, you talk and you speak passionately about those lessons. But how come not just South Africans, but how come a lot of people can't learn from history? They have the inability to look at things and either replicate or improve on it, but they want to go do something different and something that is perhaps not as functional.
Well, there's really two ways to look at life. And one way, and it's exactly the same when you give a presentation, the audience will always be split into the fault finders, the people that are looking for fault, and the application hunters. And unfortunately, the majority of human beings spend their time trying to find fault. And the media are very good at encouraging us. And very few people look back and look forward and trying to hunt for applications. How can I apply that body of knowledge that's there? All the answers are there throughout the history of mankind. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to reinvent everything that has been done before. We must just apply what has been working before. And obviously, King Shaka's methodology is one of them.
Application is a key word. I mean, I'd be fascinated to see the response from your interviewees before Angela Merkel's visit and afterwards, because what she really identified was the gap between the promise and the delivery. What is your view? I mean, has Angela Merkel's trip to South Africa changed your view? And if so, how?
Well, interestingly, Angela Merkel, while she was here, spent a lot of her time on her mobile because there was a major crisis happening in Germany at the same time. And she was attending to it, and as a result, the her chosen successor had been axed, as you probably know, AKK, and the party is literally in turmoil. So the German reunification project is actually, it's not where it should be. So, but that's a subject for a different day. I think obviously there is a gap between, but I think what really needs to be done, and I mean the leaders know it, is that we need to apply African solutions to African problems, and we can literally leapfrog. Thanks to technology today, we can leapfrog many other nations in a very short period of time. And that's why I'm confident by 2025 we can be in the top 10 countries.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Just switching it then back to the, sort of the marketing and advertising component of that. 1995 was first glorious success, 2010, you know, built in on 2007. But in 2020 and in 2025, the new hidden component of marketing is social media. So you can control a message up to a point at a macro level, but how do you, how would you implement, you know, social media into any 2025 program which seeks to frame things positively? Because right now, I mean, one of my pet kind of peeves is just the wave of negativity. You know, I've got to go through 100 messages to find one inspirational one. So delete, delete, delete. How do we drive this new thought process using technology?
Well, it was actually Nelson Mandela who said, and that was really his call to action shortly before he passed on. He said, let us build a nation of champions. And I believe that's exactly what you have to do. If you look at the modern champions like Sia Kolisi, like Zozi Bini, Miss Universe, they are incredibly inspiring leaders. If you just listen to the speech by Sia Kolisi at the Laureus Awards earlier this week, and obviously these are being amplified on Twitter, they're being amplified across social media. So we need to tune out the noise, and we need to tune into the real leaders. And they're there, and I think last year with the Springbok World Cup, with Sia Kolisi, with Zozi Bini Tunzi, they are there, those champions are there. All we need to do is we need to elevate them, and we need to amplify them.
And Nick, absolutely. You know, I watched Laureus, as I think a lot of us did, and it was wonderful to see a guy up there, and he spoke so well, and he spoke about, he singled out his players behind him, and yet brought it back into the unified thing. And what he did is he pointed out what people would see as obvious differences in Cheslin Kolbe's height, perhaps, and Francois Lowe comes from a very different background, etc., etc. But yet, at the end of the day, they won the team of the year. They didn't win the individuals of the year. So it was very powerful. I also quite pleased to see Lewis Hamilton saying that he was privileged to meet Sia in the box afterwards. Now, you know, any winner at Laureus is fantastic in his or her craft. The problem, though, Nick, is why don't we do these things? You know, we know. What we should do, and you made the point earlier, the audience, a lot of them will be fault finders, negativity, they write the headlines, and bad new headlines sell more than good ones. But it's sad though, Gordon, you know, here we are, we won the World Cup last year, and I don't know, did we do enough? You know, we win Laureus, these are big things. Now I look at companies like Brand SA and Proudly South African, and all these initiatives of saying, why don't they jump on it and make more of it, you know? Amplify it more. Tell our story more. Because what else is the story? You know, if we're not going to tell the good news, well, what are we going to tell?
Well, look, I think you need to choose your channels. Those are not always the official channels. You can follow any channel. You can follow my LinkedIn leadership channel on LinkedIn. I had 5.75 million content views on LinkedIn last year. And I always post inspiring leadership-related content. Get a very good response, and that's what people do these days, especially on LinkedIn. So forget about the traditional media, forget about the traditional sources of news and content, and tune into the new and inspirational sources, and I think you'll be energized in new and incredible ways.
Yeah, and I think, you know, perhaps something we've had to learn since 1995. In a strange way, if 1995 for me in the World Cup of Nations tournament was bad for us because it created the impression that we were just going to win everything. And we spent a long time beating ourselves up because we didn't win all the time. And over the years, I've made a point of going to many events, including the Olympics and that. And the one bunch of supporters that really touched me were the Dutch supporters. Dutch supporters don't win anything, but they party the hardest. And I guess, how do you get yourself to the point where even if you aren't winning, you feel like a winner, and you behave like a winner, and you look like a winner? Because the Dutch supporters for me in 2010 taught us how to look and feel and behave like a winner, even if you weren't winning.
That's actually a very good point. And interestingly, when we hosted the Global Fan Awards in 2010, it was the Dutch supporters that were voted the best fans in 2010. Mm. And yeah, it's I mean, if you just look at the country, Netherlands, they don't have any resources. It's a very flat country. Yet they are one of the, and they've been for a long time, one of the most successful economic powers, trading houses of the world. So it's definitely the spirit of the people. It's no doubt.
Yeah, it's the philosophy, that self-belief, Nick. And I think that's the point we were talking about earlier. You know, if you look at, and you made the point of tourism versus mining historically. Mm-hmm. So if we can accept that that's where we are, we've got a beautiful country that has got everything in it. You know what I mean? We've got everything that we need from a natural resource perspective. I'm talking about beaches and great weather and everything in between. How do we inculcate a self-belief, Gordon, a philosophy, a culture of can-do, a winner culture, where you don't look at the negativity, you actually look at the positives and want to be better?
Well, again, I think all the lessons are there from 2010. If you think about, and I call them the seven motivators, the seven drivers of motivational intelligence. If you think about how we created one team through Football Fridays, remember, Football Fridays, everybody was wearing the Bafana shirt, everybody felt part of the same team. Contribution. The Vuvuzela was a fantastic tool to unlock contribution. Everybody, even the visitors, could contribute to the World Cup by blowing the Vuvuzela. And many did. I never forget the Mexican fans in Merrill's Ark. The lessons are there. We must just, on an individual level, we mustn't wait for government, we mustn't wait for anybody else. On an individual level, we must just unlock the motivation and unlock the energy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we had the icons. I mean, the Vuvuzela was a good example. Makarapa made us feel the same. We all went to football. I mean, I've never worn a Makarapa in my life before 2010. So we had those bonding iconic devices. So as we look now between 20 and 25, how do we find those iconic devices? And you're saying don't look to politicians. We had one politician who was our iconic device, and I don't think we're going to have another one. What are those iconic devices that we can use? And bring it back to your Isiqhubeka code. I mean, what were the iconic devices that Shaka used to build a sense of unity?
Well, that's a very good point, Gordon. The iconic devices and tools that King Shaka used was obviously other than battle and giving. What he really figured out is that what his people wanted at the time was, first of all, they wanted a sense of security. Interestingly, in those days, before Shaka became king, there was a great sense of insecurity because in Southern Africa, the tribes, there was no unity. The tribes were fighting each other. What he realized also is that once an external aggressor, such as the British, would come in, then they had to be strong. They had to have a united empire. So that was the one motivator. The other one was growth. He gave his soldiers a fantastic ability to grow on the battlefield and beyond. He also realized that elevation has a massive impact on the human psyche. So he elevated his army from the famous, infamous smelling out ceremony that the Isangomas practiced, where they identified members of the community that had done well and the army, and sought to eliminate them. So he really made Zululand a mecca of freedom, a haven for free thinking, and that's how he attracted many, many of the best soldiers and generals voluntarily and for free.
Well, as a haven of free thinking, Doc, and I guess we're going to wrap up fairly shortly, I suppose the last place I'd be looking right now is Parliament, which is part of the problem, but you raised that point earlier. Maybe we should just be looking for other places for inspiration, for young people, young leaders, future leaders. And I'm saying I'm really looking forward. You give me something to look forward to in 2025 because I would love to see the outcome of the Future Leader Program. Doc, thanks for bringing in Dr. Nick. It's been fascinating. It really has been.
Thank you.
Yeah, Gordon, thanks. Nick, again, just from our side, just in closing, and just one last comment from your side on two aspects. Your future leader plan, I mean, that's a fantastic initiative. So if you can just give us one or two things that leaders can do today to be better leaders. And then two, brand South Africa. I just want one or two points in terms of how can we win the nation building World Cup, the World Cup of hospitality, the World Cup of fan engagement, the World Cup of being a South African. So the leadership, two or three points, and then on brand South Africa.
Well, it all comes down to innovation and what I call the next big idea. And it was one big idea that obviously King Shaka used to create a global empire, and that was elevation. It was another big idea that Nelson Mandela propagated to the world, which was forgiveness. Yes, we can forgive, even in the face of the gravest injustice, and that moved the world. And it's so if you look at what is the next big idea that can really move the country to the next level, that's number one. And I think number two is that we just have to make South Africa safe again. The demand is there. The demand from a tourism and point of view is definitely there. And I think we can literally 10x tourism, inbound tourism, leisure tourism, if we get safety right.
Nick, thanks very much. And again, you know, I really do appreciate your time coming in. I know we're all busy. Nick, just quickly, how do people get a hold of you? You spoke just now about a big following on LinkedIn. Are there other platforms? How do I get a hold of you if I want to follow you?
Go to LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the number one platform now and into the future, especially since Microsoft bought LinkedIn, as you may know. So go to Dr. Nick on LinkedIn, Dr. Nick Ebel. You'll find me easily. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I'm very, very happy to engage.
Nick, thanks very much. And really, again, to our listeners out there, please do that. Please engage with Dr. Nick, and not just Dr. Nick, the doc and the guru. Talk to us. We want to talk with you. We want to be part of the dialogue. Nick spoke passionately and very intelligently about a lot of global lessons. He also spoke about African solutions for African problems. We're all Africans, and African is African, not Afrikaant, if you look at that word. And I often use it in talks. I say, we're Africans. Let's talk about what we can do, how we can make a difference. So, Gordon, another fascinating talk.
Absolutely, and a great wrap-up there. And, you know, two docs and one tiny little guru. I'm feeling a little bit intimidated here, so I'm just going to shut up and get off air.
Two smaller docs and one big guru.
You still remember the 2010 guru, the one guru that was able to predict the outcome of...
Indeed, yes, the one with eight appendages.
Absolutely,
yes. Yeah. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, German.
Maybe he was, he was. I think his name was Paul.
Paul the octopus. But I have got a feeling he was. I think he was I think he came out of Frankfurt. I think he might have been. Why don't we just claim him, Paul?
Okay. Paul the German.
Paul the German. Exactly.
Well, back to Nick the German. Nick again. Thanks very much, Gordon. From our side, let's sign off. Yep. And to our listeners out there, please tune in, like us, subscribe,
and subscribe to us.
Get involved. If you don't want to miss an episode, subscribe us for free, get onto our channels, and then from both Gordon and I, we'll catch you next week.
We'll catch you next week.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word, this is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.